Hey everyone, and welcome back to a brand new episode of the 1001 Films Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Gardner, and today I'm going to be doing something a little different. Recently I did a post on my blog, the 1001 Films blog at 1001filmblog.wordpress.com. Check it out. Anyway, my latest post on that website, on that blog, was about examining the consciousness of HAL 9000 and how there are certain scenes and moments in the film 2001 A Space Odyssey that allows us to examine the consciousness of this computer and consciousness in general and what that means to be a conscious being. So it's a little complex and it's a little confusing. So I'm just gonna read what I have written, because I know there are some people that see my blog but don't see my podcast, and there's people that see my podcast that don't see my blog. So I feel like this is a marriage between the two for this one episode. See how it does, see how it is, how you guys like it, of just me just reading one of my blog posts. So we'll get to it right after the break. Since debuting in April of 1968, 2001 A Space Odyssey has been dissected from seemingly every angle by critics, journalists, philosophers, professors, YouTubers, bloggers, film lovers, and average moviegoers alike. Additionally, because 2001 is my favorite film, I have struggled with the dichotomy of wanting to talk about this masterpiece and not wanting to beat the proverbial dead horse. I could talk about the stunning visuals created completely with physical models and practical sets. I could talk about the film's contemplative, almost hypnotically slow pace. I could talk about its extensive ambiguity. I could talk about the deliberately anti-narrative structure. But still, a simple explanation of why these things make 2001 a great film would not do it justice. So, rather than doing a regular review, I wish to add to the discussion an analysis of a single scene. In the interest of conciseness, I will assume that you have seen the film and know all the major characters and how they fit into the story. The fulcrum moment of 2001 occurs when Dave and the HAL 9000 computer are discussing the aspects of their mission to Jupiter. One ambiguity presented in this scene is the nature of consciousness, more specifically, the nature of consciousness as it relates to HAL. Is HAL a conscious, sentient, and emotional being like a human? Because the film does not pose this question explicitly, Kubrick forces us to be active participants. It is only after repeat viewings that we may even surmise that this is a question that the film is asking us to answer. We are presented with an incomplete set of facts, and we must examine the ambiguities between those facts to see what is implied. There are things that we can never know for sure. Kubrick liked it that way. But after we examine the facts, I think we can assume that HAL is a sentient being. So, here are some facts that we know for a fact are true. Number one, HAL is the only one on board the Discovery who knows the details of the mission concerning the extraterrestrials. Two, HAL has been instructed to keep those details a secret from the human crew. Three, HAL has been instructed to do at least one crew psychology report during the mission. Four, Dave asks HAL if he is working on, quote, your crew psychology report. Five, HAL makes a prediction that the AE-35 unit will fail within 72 hours with 100% reliability immediately after being confronted by Dave. Six, Hal says he has concerns about the strangeness and rumors surrounding the mission. Now, here are some reliable conclusions that can be drawn from these stated facts. One, because Dave says to Hal, "You're working on your crew psychology report," Dave knew beforehand that Hal had been instructed to make such a report. Just a little side note. We do not know how Dave knows this. Maybe Frank fell for Hal's lie and warned Dave. Maybe because Dave is the commander of the mission, he was privy to certain information others were not. Maybe on previous missions Dave has been on, there was a psychologist as part of the human crew that is no longer needed because of Hal. Two, because Hal knows the discovery of the monolith on the moon is not just a rumor, but is in fact true, it is impossible for him to have concerns about the rumors surrounding the mission. He knows the truth. Therefore, in this moment, Hal is not exhibiting genuine emotions and is lying to Dave. Now here are some more questionable speculations. One, Dr. Haywood Floyd does not trust the crew to be able to reckon with the possibility of extraterrestrial life, so he only informs Hal of these details and instructs Hal to make a report of the crew's psychological state before they are informed of the true nature of the mission. Two, Hal lies to Dave about having concerns about the rumors surrounding the mission in order to get the most honest answers possible for his crew psychology report. If the crew knows that the future of the mission hinges on their psychological state, they have an incentive to lie to Hal. Three, because Hal feels like he can get away with lying to Dave, Hal does not know that Dave knows about the psychology report beforehand. Four, because Dave says your crew psychology report instead of a or another crew psychology report, this is Hal's first and only attempt at analyzing Dave's psychology. Five, Hal is embarrassed that he got caught by Dave in his lie because he says, "I'm sorry about this. It seems a bit silly." In other words, "I'm sorry I was deceptive. I'm sorry I couldn't be straightforward with you. It was silly to try to trick you." Six, because of the previous point, Hal uses the supposed failure of the AE-35 unit to change the subject and avoid any further confrontation surrounding his dishonesty, a very natural human response to the situation. It is impossible to know if this prediction is a lie or a truth. However, it is irrelevant because either way, the goal of changing the subject of the conversation is still achieved. So, there's a lot to process there, but I believe that this scene shows that Hal is more than just a programmable computer. He is actively making choices about how to navigate the world and his relationships. His tone of voice is very flat, and he does not exhibit any facial expression or body language. He's a computer. So he is like a blank canvas. Because of the words he is saying and the timing of the pauses in between the words and sentences, we get just enough of a sense of emotion that we begin to empathize with him. This empathy is no greater than in the scene of Hal's slow, methodical, and haunting death. Hal calmly pleads for his life, using tactics such as reasoning with Dave, assuaging Dave's fear and anger, and when all else has failed, simply demanding, "Stop, Dave." When Hal finally comes to terms with his demise, the words, I'm afraid, Dave. My mind is going. I can feel it. I can feel it. Send chills down my spine. This last-ditch effort by Hal to save himself, and his expression of fear while on the threshold of destruction, makes me believe that Hal is as feeling as any of us. Who among us, when faced with the same dilemma, would not act the same?